Good evening, everybody. This is Veronica Entwistle, and you have tuned in to Paradigm Shifters here on BBS Radio. And I have a wonderful, wonderful woman on the other line waiting to talk to you. She's the channel Amaji, lovingly known as Amaji. She's the channel for Mafu, who's an enlightened being, and she's been channeling Mafu for 20-odd years and has taught us a great deal, has shifted the paradigm for many, many students. So welcome to the show, Amaji.
Veronica, it's so nice to talk to you. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I also wanted to take a few moments just to thank all of your listeners for giving me the opportunity to speak with you about what we study and the philosophies that we practice. And I wanted to just say up front that I value and respect all philosophies, and so if anything I say offends anyone in any way, I just wanted to say up front that I truly do respect all paths, and I believe they all have value.
Wonderful, and I know that Mafu combines universal principles no matter what path each of us adheres to, is that not right?
Mafu seems to combine most universal principles. I study his wisdom with some theologians and kind of compare different religious studies to what he studies. And so far, it seems to me most of the spiritual paths I've looked at seem to concur together. All of the great masters, certainly the great masters that are coming through many great channels today, as well as far back as you and I are able to read about, we've all been influenced by the great universal truth.
We sure have. One of the ones that, you know, I was watching the DVDs, which you graciously sent me, and I have loved them. I've watched them a million times, I think.
Oh, I'm so glad.
One of the laws that was brought up a lot that I haven't heard named that way is the law of self-approval. You want to talk a bit about that?
You know, I appreciate you asking me about that. The law of self-approval is the first in a series of laws that bring us to what so many people today are so inspired by, which is the law of attraction. And what we have found in our studies, we've been working in meditation for, as you said, some 20-some years, and it'll be 22 years this June. And we found that the law of attraction works best when we ourselves find self-forgiveness, self-approval, and the forgiveness of all others. When we can actually say, I am a worthy being, I am worthwhile, and we can take that the small ego of I'm worthwhile and the big ego of I'm worthwhile and go into the super consciousness ego of that greater spiritual side of everything I've done brought me to where I am today, and that's what counts. And so I forgive myself for the choices that I've made that have harmed myself or anyone else, and I especially forgive anyone who has ever done anything that has harmed me in any way. And that forgiveness, that law of self-approval, that I am really worth calling forth from manifest destiny, from what is to come, a change in what I was going to wear Tuesday because of karma, a change in those clothes, what was going to happen, a change in my financial situation, or a change in my romantic life, or my spiritual awakening. This all comes from the ability to forgive ourselves and recognize ourselves as spiritual beings.
Wonderful. I want to ask several things, but I'm going to start off with, how did you begin to channel Mafu? And I know you have your own very, very strong spiritual journey. So let's learn a little bit about you, if we can. Thanks.
Gosh, I haven't thought about those things in so many years. Thank you for asking. I worked for the Los Angeles Police Department, and I had had my baby and chose not to go back to work. I think once you become a mother, a lot of things change. Excuse me.
They sure do.
They certainly do. And my husband was still working for LAPD, and some very peculiar things began happening around our home. What I would now call perhaps mystical or psychic experiences, psychic realities, and kinetic, energetic things. Things started moving on countertops as I would pass by. And being a very good Catholic, I, of course, thought, because I had married a divorced man, something was up in the heavens. I didn't have really an understanding of what I've come to understand now. And one day, I began having sort of automatic writings. And I was writing so rapidly, and the energy was coming through my body. I didn't understand it was automatic writings. And two wonderful people, Roseanne Ingraham and Cynthia Lockery, assisted me in understanding those things. They're two magnificent channels on this planet and great vessels of peace.
And tell me this, were you already a metaphysician, or were you already aiming in that direction?
No, I was very Catholic.
Okay.
But I was very old-time Catholic, so I was very mystical in the sense that I always believed the statues in church moved, and I always, as a child, had experiences with what I believed were angels and the saints who I could sort of see out of the corner of my eye. So I think that I was probably always being groomed or guided or perhaps born in this lifetime with a gift of clear audio and clear visual of another side than the side we live on. And so anyway, we started to, my husband at the time, Tony and I, started to look for help, and we got help from these two wonderful women. And then one day, Mafu appeared to both of us. We were sitting, Tony was comforting me. I was very concerned about some of the psychic visions I was having, and he was comforting me, and we were sitting on the edge of our bed, and the bed kind of came up and then plopped back down, and Mafu appeared. And from then on, we both began seeing Mafu. My son began seeing Mafu. He began talking to us and explaining to us his purpose in coming and requesting permission for me to be a channel, his channel. Mm. And that's how I met him. And it took me a long time, you know. It took me a long time, Veronica, in meditation and in serious spiritual revelations and experiences to make peace with the Catholicism and the very militant family I grew up in, and make peace with how life is in truth with God, how we are all divine beings, and how we are all created of the same one. And here I am today talking with you. So
that's wonderful.
I feel very happy.
This is a funny question. What does Mafu look like? What did he look like to you?
That's a great question, too. Wow, I haven't been asked these questions in so long. Mafu.
Well, we haven't had you as our wonderful guest before, so we got to start right at the beginning.
No, this
don't
is
we?
Terrific. This is great. You know, whenever Mafu's about to come or is leaving my presence, the light is so blinding, I am unable to be present with myself. So I know he's going to come or that he's going to be leaving, because I start losing the ability to be present with myself is the only way I can explain it. It's just the sound and the light is too bright. When Mafu appears in form for me, which I so graciously appreciate that he does, either He used to meet with me all the time in this world and still does occasionally, but now sometimes, thankfully, he sweeps me out of my own mind and into a much greater place where I study with him. But he always appears the same. He's very beautiful. He has very long black hair, and which he often keeps back from his face. He looks sort of indigenous Indian to me, or Peruvian maybe, in his facial features are very long, and his hands are very long. His hands always, to this day, kind of captivate me. They're very long, his hands and his fingers. And his body is also very, I want to say the word yogic because I don't know another way to describe it. It's very sort of on the thinner side and very long and tall. And he's very beautiful, and he becomes very substantial when he comes here to meet with me, as well as when, through sound, through mantra, he takes me to where I study with him. He's very substantial. He's very tactile. He's very touchable, and very present. So my experience with him is very real.
And he's only been embodied, what, once, or...?
No, he had several lifetimes. I think he had 7 lifetimes that he has talked openly about. His last time was, interestingly enough, as a leper in Pompeii, in which he learned to value more than himself. And he came here during a time when people were fleeing the Pleiades, during, I think, some warring conditions, as he's described them. And he brought the people for whom he was like an overlord during a time when gods and men and gods and women sort of had a relationship that was different than we have had, but we're beginning to have again. And when I say the word gods, I think of all of us as gods, but the ones who had self-realized. And so he brought his people from Egypt, and to Egypt, from a place called Maledek, and chose to take a body there. And as a result of which, he admits that he became very favorable to the human condition. He enjoyed himself probably a little too much, and stopped being so interested in his more mystical side and became a little more interested in the human side of his existence, and that began his lifetimes.
How interesting. I remember, and I want to get into you, but I just want to say I remember from quite a while back when I studied some many, many tapes that he did a lot of sounds. He made a lot of sounds and body movements and so on. It was very, very transcendent material, wasn't it?
Amazing, amazingly so. In fact, this last weekend we just had an event, and in reviewing the DVDs, at one point he looks like this mystical dancer. He does a form of Tai Chi, which is called Absu Chi, and he makes sounds. I think some of the sounds are more mystical in nature or mantric, you know, in nature, Sanskrit in nature. Some of them he combines, and then some are just sounds. And then he also uses movement to move the ki or the shakti or the chi, whatever word people like to use for energy, around and through people and in people. And anyway, watching the DVDs from this past weekend's event amazed me to see how fluid he is.
And, boy, it's hard to know which way to go. There's just so much material here. Why did he come? I know you and I spoke briefly about, the world's political situation, economic things, and I was thinking about how, why did he come? Because this is a turning point time. We're supposed to be kind of speeding up our evolution, our awakening, and so on, in order to awaken more on the planet, are we not?
That's a great question and a really great point, Veronica, and I'm so happy that you're educated to that, because I think that's so important that people be informed of that. This is considered in Kashmir Shaivism, which is sort of the path we study with Mahfu. It's the time of the Kali Yuga. It's the time of the goddess. And what's believed about this time is that it's a time when the most ignorant, thankfully for people like me, are able to evolve ourselves into a recognition of our own divinity, and especially the divinity within others, therefore reflecting back to ourselves our own divinity. And this is a time that most yogis of every lifetime have spent lifetimes to earn. We have an opportunity, those of us who don't necessarily have the karma, we have been invited through the Dharma of such beings as His Holiness the Dalai Lama, or most recently attained Mahat Samadhi, His Holiness the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. These great beings, through their invitation, we have been invited into their Dharma of self-realization. And so you and I talked earlier, starting in the early 1900s with Swami Sri Yukteswari and his disciple, Swami Paramananda Yogananda, Paramahansa Yogananda, the United States Senate began investigating the intrigue of Eastern philosophy into the Western culture. And I lovingly, you know, I'm a great patriot of this country, and when I say patriot, I mean an individual who believes in peace on earth, freedom, health, and life on earth for all living beings. And I appreciate so much that this country allows me and all others to practice the spirituality of our choice. I think it's fascinating that our own Congress maintain sort of an organization within them of psychics that help.
Really?
Yeah, that help to recognize the changes as they happen long before they happen, long before most people who read or live their daily lives might even know about them. And so, you know, I've always been privileged to understand that so many things that we are going through right now are being so sped up, not for the purpose of destruction, but rather for the purpose of inclusion. And the opportunity to work with beings from beyond this world, although third dimensional, and beings from beyond the third dimensional realm as well. And how many...
Which is very exciting, and it's something I really want to talk about.
It is very exciting, Veronica. I agree with you. And it's a privilege to participate in the very small way that I do with a tremendous group of people who I have the privilege to study beside up here in Oregon and who fly in from all over the world. But it's such an exciting time, and it's such a time for transition, but it's not a frightening time. It's not the kind of transition that a lot of people unfortunately in the New Age and in a lot of extremist societies want to call for. This is not going to be a time of destruction. This really isn't. It's a time of great transition for sure, and great evening for sure, but it's not the end of all time.
Do you think that there's a polarity going on? Do you think there's a strong polarity going on, like that there's going to be kind of a crunch over this year?
I didn't catch you. A what?
Well, there's a lot of beings who say that the dark and the light are going to meet this year.
Yeah, you know, I know. What's interesting is I'm sort of in a very unique position, obviously, being an ecclesiastical leader of our organization. I get a lot of information from different organizations, and I get asked that question a lot. I think the dark and the light has always met. Mm-hmm. And I believe what I study. And that is true for me. I'm not demeaning anyone else's philosophy, but for me, what I study is that this is actually a time and a year of unity. And I don't believe that unity is handed to us. I believe it is something we do together. But I truly believe that love transcends darkness and light transcends darkness. And I truly believe that this year and next year especially, these 2 years, there will be revelations of goodness never, ever known before on our planet. This is, you know, Veronica, when you and I think about it, this is the first time ever in the world that impoverished people are being taken care of in numbers that, of course, we would love to see everyone fed and everyone medically cared for and everyone given water, and that is coming. But right now, today, as you and I sit here, it's more than ever before. And so the people that cry out doom, whether they are fundamentalist New Agers or fundamentalist Christians or fundamentalist whatever, they are not for me a reality of truth except in their experience. I truly believe they experience great suffering. But I am experiencing so much energized shifting into life in people that don't even study with me, but with whom I have the privilege to have conversations with, that are great leaders in their own organizations or within different governments and different spiritual teachers. There are tremendous shifts of light occurring. And these are the shifts that I think for me on my path and with the people I study with and practice with, and certainly what MAFU teaches, what we focus upon are these great universal laws that produce that momentum that allows the shift of light to completely overwhelm any darkness. I truly believe the darkest times are behind us. And I wanted to say one last thing about that, because you and I had talked about it earlier. Obviously, I'm in a position to have some understandings that I can't always share, but I can say this. Whatever face people put on the devil or on the darkness or on hell or the shadow government really is in the shadows. It really isn't the people that we like to look at and go, that's the monster, because darkness works best when we're not looking. Because when we look, we're beings of love. Veronica, I can feel your heart, and I can feel your soul, and that's why I was so happy to speak with you. You're a being of love. Mm-hmm. And when you look, light happens and goodness happens. And so darkness kind of happens where we're not looking. And that's why I think it's such an important time of unity in the New Age world. We've been given this gift. Do you remember that movie, The Sphere, with Sharon Stone and Dustin Hoffman?
And there was I don't think I saw it.
Yeah, it was the sphere from outer space supposedly came to the bottom of the ocean. Anyway, anyone who went to it, whatever was going on in them, got like accelerated. So people who had fears, their fears got accelerated. But people of goodness and of heart, those things became accelerated. And I think that this year and next year, as we genuinely experience ourselves even happier, even kinder, showing more tolerance. The Dalai Lama just spoke today. He said, if my own people are going to uprise in violence, I will step down. And I thought that was an amazing statement. And I read on to read the full AP report, and he said, I can only support kindness and tolerance, even if we are being oppressed. And I think that the more goodness we see, the more goodness we will see. And I think that darkness will always attempt to get through. But I don't think it, I think the darkest times have happened. I know that's not a popular opinion, but it is my experience, and it is the conversations that I have with the great leaders that I get the opportunity to speak with.
Wonderful. And Mafu said in one of the, in this DVD that I have, something that you, this is just a, the same thing you're saying, only it's a different reiteration, which is, that everyone, that if you see a leader that you don't like or you don't trust and so on, it's, again, a reflection of what's inside, and that's where we go to heal that. And then we see with a higher light. Is that right?
You know, that's such a... I'm so appreciative to talk to you today, Veronica. I have to tell you, one of the things that I wrote down that I wanted to say to you was, you know, people like to look at Dick Cheney, and he's a great example of people who look at, we can often look at him and we can think, what are his ulterior motives and what is he really doing? What we do at our ashram is we look for the sameness in everyone. Anything we can find that we can say, okay, we're the same right now. And just a few months ago, he went to the hospital. He needed help. He was in a very serious situation. And we made a prayer circle for him, as we do for anyone who asks for prayer. And we prayed for what was so important to him, which was that he lived through a very dire situation he was in. And he also has a lesbian daughter who, with her partner, has had a child. These are the same things that we can find in common with him, from my point of view, in which I can say, in this part, I can reach out to this man in love. In this, I can extend my soul and say to you, take the love in my soul, because you love your daughter when it's not popular to do so. And take my soul because you wanted to live. So take a part of my love. I offer that peace to you. And what I want for him, what I want for President Bush, Mafu said it, and it was so brilliant. He said, what does it matter to us who is known for bringing peace? It doesn't matter. All that matters is peace. And so what does it matter who is known for bringing love? It doesn't matter. I truly, truly believe with all of my heart that irrespective of what attempts to go on behind our backs here or there, overwhelmingly, if we can hold on to love, and if we can hold on to the power of love and the gift of the universal laws that have been given to us in this century from the East, and use this gift as it's intended to, and just let our fears be behind us, like Mafu's taught me, as golden white footsteps coming out of it, and let our past be behind us, and be in absolute self-approval and the approval and the forgiveness of others, to forgive America for its mistakes and the harm and actually the destruction it's caused. Forgive others for the harm and destruction that they've caused. Because it doesn't matter to me anymore who or what. It matters that there is peace, that there is life, that there is love. And I love that you and I just got to talk about that. I appreciate that
wonderful.
So much.
Well, then on a little bit more of a trite level or more of a third dimensional level, do you believe that the tide is changing? As you said, the next 2 years, the tide is changing? Because many times we're hearing lately, and I even hear it from my own guidance, that it's time for us to move very swiftly into our mastery of selves and releasing. It's time to move collectively and very swiftly. What do you say to that?
When you mean collectively and swiftly into ourselves, are you speaking of into ourselves as a state of recognition and experience of ourselves as a divine being and others as a divine being?
Exactly. That's exactly it. And also being able to master, for example, the universal laws in the face of what might be a fear-inducing situation. But instead of going into the fear part, is into the clearing and back into personal mastery.
Exactly.
Does that make sense?
I think it makes perfect sense, and I think your guides are completely right. And what I would call clearing, or what you just used as clearing, I would call the law of self-approval. It is the very first law of the universal laws before you get to the law of the power of attraction, which can work, but it can really work if you have the power of the law of self-forgiveness and forgiveness of others, self-love, self-approval, and the love and approval of others, or seeing God in all things and really seeing it, feeling it, and experiencing it and making it very, very important, the most important thing that we do. And then the next thing I think is the law of conviction, which we also study, which is there's a phenomenal part of the limbic system of the brain, which doesn't make decisions. It just sort of reacts. It just kind of reacts from all of our karmas or samskaras or training in this lifetime. And so it's entering into that part of our brain and becoming absolutely convinced that what is so important to me, to you, to everyone, is life and peace and kindness and goodness and health and food and clean water and clean air on earth for all living beings. I make that a personal conviction, and most of the spiritualists I know do as well. We certainly all make personal convictions as well as our own, of our own, bringing out the very best in ourselves, or some people want to be able to relax or whatever, but making it understanding there is a law, there's an actual law in the universe called the conviction phenomena. And then after that comes the law of attraction. That's when what we attract, there's nothing in the way. There's no self-doubt in the way to attract it.
Right.
That's how you and I
agree
came
with
together.
That entirely.
You and I came together because there was no doubt in my mind at all of what a perfect spiritual being you are and are continuing to become, and how important the people that you love and who listen to you and love you are to me, and how much I care. And so there was nothing in my way at all to make this an important time between you and I and everyone, just like it wasn't in your way, because you obviously practiced the law of what you call clearing, or what I call self-approval. And then after that comes the law of gratitude, or of great thanks for the opportunities to have goodness and peace on earth. And then the law of momentum starts to take over, and that goodness starts to take over. And what we see is that no matter what, it doesn't matter that we've had 8 years of what felt like falling down. What matters is that we have great leaders rising up who, in spite of what it may look like, want to bring this country back to being a country that helps other countries and that has a reputation for being helpful and good and kind. And ultimately, that's what we're going to see. But we're going to see it on a much greater scale with all world leaders. I think your listeners, I know the people I study with, the other people I talk with, I know that the joy of knowing that and of understanding that letting go of the fear that some people use to control other people by saying, oh, this or oh, that, but recognizing that the love and the peace and the kindness and the self-approval, that is what will make not only ourselves stronger, but our communities, our states, our countries, and ultimately our world a place of light. And I do believe, I agree with you, I think that the next 2 years are a very sped up time and a very important time for self-realization.
Talk about your center. I really love what you said, and it'll resonate for a while before I comment. But let's talk about your center, because you have two things there. You have a Center for Meditative Studies, Foundation for Meditative Studies. You also have an animal rescue center called the Tiger Sanctuary.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for asking about that. It's actually the birthday of Raja and Tara, who are sort of my tiger gurus. And they taught me peace. And the Oregon Tiger Sanctuary, we founded it in 1991. We started rescuing neglected performing animals, animals that were going to be euthanized or animals that were being abused. We work with the Fish and Wildlife here in this state to assist in passing laws. We were named number one by the USDA for private sanctuary this year. Years prior to that, we were always number three, but that's still pretty good. We spend a great deal of time educating the public that exotic animals are very important in the ecostructure of the world.
So you're working mostly with exotic animals?
We work mostly with exotic animals. We have some domestic animals that have been dropped off, or I'm sort of the gatherer, collector that that brings up to the OTS, to Oregon Tiger Sanctuary, the animals that are in need. We place a lot of animals. We sort of work sometimes as a vessel to help place animals that are exotics that need placement, who have been in service in the medical industry. We have one baboon who gave her life and was injected with breast cancer. She still lives with us, but she gave her life for breast cancer research, and I certainly have my own feelings about animal research. Nonetheless, I choose to do what I can to be helpful, and Samantha lives with us and will live out her life on green grass and not in a small cage or being euthanized. She served this country, many countries, very well. And so we have a lot of primates and big cats and some domestic animals.
How many animals do you have?
We have, I think, around 69 animals.
Whoa, that's a lot.
That is a lot. And we have
first
a tremendous
crew. How many
crew.
Tigers do they have in Oregon?
You know, unfortunately, there are a number of illegal tigers all over this country. So we work to help the USDA assist people in acquiring correct housing for those animals and correct food, housing so that those animals are not in danger and people are not in danger, and the correct kind of food so the animal can have the kind of nutrients it needs and the kind of space it needs in its caging. We've also helped to assist stopping canned hunts, which are where they take animals that have been owned by people, exotics, and then they let them out of a cage, and then a hunter pays $10,000 and shoots them. We actually have shut down 24 canned hunt sites, and so we're very, very blessed in our work. And I'm so deeply appreciative that you asked about the Oregon Tiger Sanctuary. Most of the people that work there have worked there since 1991, and they're a tremendous group of individuals. And like I said, today's a birthday. It's kind of the birthday month for a lot of the animals for some reason. And today's a very special birthday up at the Oregon Tiger Sanctuary. And so everybody was very celebratory today.
Oh, wonderful. And so what are they like? I mean, does it take a lot of rehabilitation to get them to feel safe, or is there any of they just kind of move in and it's fine, or what?
Thank you for asking that question. You know, it depends, first of all, on the age of the animal and what they've gone through. Animals, exotic animals, are a lot like human beings in that they have that subconscious trigger. You know, they have that reactive mind. So they may see a keeper who has dark hair and remember when they were beaten by someone with dark hair, and they might have a reaction to that keeper. And we have a system that we've worked on. Actually, we worked on for years and years until we got to a place where the USDA has actually used our sanctuary's guidelines with a lot of the teachings that they do. We're very blessed to have worked with Dr. Lori Gage, who worked with Marine World until Marine World sold out and became for profit. And then we helped her in the placement of some of the animals she was able to place away from what then turned into a theme park. And we also took some of the animals from Marine World at that time and placed them at our place. And when they come in, they go through kind of a detox emotional period of time. We spend a great deal of time earning their trust. Almost every animal there is not an animal that can be handled. They come, you know, way too late in life to be handled, but they can all be worked with to a point of trust and joy, and they all have very spacious cages. We're very blessed to have great benefactors, and they have great lives, and then on birthday days like today, they eat a particular diet that is designed for animals in captivity to make sure their bones and their muscles stay strong. In fact, we have one of the few remaining living Bengal, full-bred Bengal tigers whose great-grandmother came over from India, unfortunately, but nonetheless, she came over, and Jai Jai, who used to be at Marine World, just turned 22 last week, and she's one of the oldest living tigers in the country, in the world. In the wild, I think they say they live to be about between 11 to 13 because they have to, of course, fight for territory and food. And in captivity, they usually live between 17 and 19, and Jai Jai is 22. And she's actually going strong. And so there is a readjustment period, just like a human being going onto a spiritual path. There's an adjustment time in which you have to kind of say, I'm safe. And so the animals
and
come to
a release of trauma from the past, too.
Exactly. They just have to say, okay, you know, I'm safe now. I can relax. Mm. And it's an amazing thing to watch. Of course, we wish we could rehabilitate and return to the wild. But with the exception of one cougar that Fish and Wildlife placed with us, every other animal was born and bred in a cage and cannot be re-released into wild territories. And Fish and Wildlife placed a cougar with us that they believe was wild bred, but it was caught near a school near the Idaho border, and the choice was to euthanize the cougar or take the cougar, and so they placed the cougar with us, and we call him Wild Man, and he got a great benefactor who we were able to build an enormous cage for him, so he really kind of thinks he's still in the wild.
Wow.
It's a beautiful place. I hope you come sometime soon so I can give you a tour.
I would love that. We were just thinking about doing that. So.
Yeah.
You don't have any elephants, do you?
We were actually asked if we would take elephants, but there's a tremendous elephant rescue sanctuary in Los Angeles, so we were able to place them there. Elephants require the kind of housing and environment that we would not be able to provide very easily here in Oregon because of the snow.
Ah.
But elephants are tremendous beings, aren't they?
Pardon me?
Elephants are tremendous beings.
Aren't they wonderful?
Yes.
And they have such a community consciousness as well. I guess most animals do, but I'm just learning about all that.
Actually, you know, tigers don't have community consciousness. They're a solo being, except when it's mating time. And but the lions, we have several different prides of lions, and I say several different prides because each of the male lions we have truly believe they are the alpha male. So we could never put them together and create one big pride, or, you know, one of them would have to dominate everyone else and someone would die, and that's not at all what we want. So we're blessed that we have benefactors that have helped us create environments so we can have the four different prides of lions that we have. And we found a veterinarian who would circumcise the men, the male lions. So, when they go into the testy and a vasectomy. So they would go in and do a vasectomy because if you remove... if you demasculate a lion, they lose all their hair, a male lion. They look like a girl. So anyway, so the male lion still gets to think he's mating and still gets to be the head of the pride, but we don't breed and produce babies at our facility as a sanctuary. And so we have these great prides of lions that make unbelievable sounds and are remarkable teachers about living within a community.
Oh, wow. That's wonderful. Well, we're going to run up out of time, and I just wonder if you'd like to close with perhaps a meditation or some commentary about for people about mastering, you know, whatever we've been talking about is that I want to remind people that they can take charge. So maybe you have a meditation or something you could share.
Veronica, thank you for that. I think that the greatest gift I can offer to anyone is to recognize that this is a time in which transition is occurring, but it is a safe time. It is a safe time to forgive yourself, to forgive everyone else, and to find self-approval and self-love. It's a safe time to become absolutely convinced that you make a difference, that one person stopping for one moment and thinking about anyone and thinking, I want the very best for you, sends out an energetic vibration, a phenomenal energetic sensation into the universe, and changes everything at an atomic and subatomic level. If I can offer your listeners anything, I will tell you the most traditional meditation we do is a breathing technique, and the sound hum, H-U-M, sa, S-A-U. And we breathe in, hum, and we breathe out, sa. And we do that for a period of time until the body becomes balanced, because when you first start breathing hum up and sa out and relaxing your shoulders, you can kind of lose your breath and you get very excited. But pretty soon you start to relax, and it's at that time that I would love to share with you and all of your listeners and repeat for myself and my own conviction. It's at that time when you get in that very special place that we can start saying the words, I always love myself, and I always bring the very best of me today to everyone. And I always receive the very best of everyone to me today. And I always love that I live. And I always seek peace on earth for all living beings. And these are the kinds of statements, the kinds of relaxations that we do. And certainly we go beyond that, but really, that's how we start every meditation, Veronica, for the most advanced and the most beginning student. And it's how we end every meditation, with self-love.
Wonderful.
And I really appreciate you asking me about that and me being allowed to share that with you.
Well, I'm going to practice it, and I'm sure the listeners are. Now, can you give your address, your email address, or not your email address, your website?
The website, I think the website is www.foundationformeditativestudies.org.
Well, you're absolutely right. I'm reading it right now.
Oh, no. I'm blessed that my husband is a computer geek, and so I get to just click on a little thing on my computer.
I have a partner who's a sound man. Huh?
We have a prayer temple on the website. I invite all of your listeners to go to. We have an amazing group of people who none of us even know, you know, that go to it and ask for someone they want to have be prayed for. You can put your name in as anonymous. You don't even have to put your name into the prayer temple. I administrate that prayer temple. I check it about 8 times a day, and I pray. We have a group of people called the Mastery Program who also functions in our prayer temple to pray the prayers of other people. And we really have this tremendous group of people that are the foundation for meditative studies. And I'm privileged to be its spokesperson, but I'm actually sort of humbled by most of them, because many of them have been meditating much longer than me and were very patient with me to find my own spiritual awakening, Veronica, and find my own place of peace. And I think that anyone going to the Foundation's website can find something phenomenal. There's a place where we have a quote of the day from Mafu, but you don't have to be a student of Mafu's. The wisdom is so eclectic, and it's just so for everyone. And again,
and
the prayer temple
is so
available.
And the radiance is very high and wonderful.
Yours is too. Veronica, what a pleasure to meet you and call you now my friend. I really appreciate meeting you, and I hope that one day you do come to visit, and I would love for you to give a talk at our ashram and lead a meditation, and I think that you would find the people there wonderful, and I'd love to take you around the Tiger Sanctuary.
Thank you. Amaji, I am so honored to have you here, and I've enjoyed the show so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I have as well. God and Goddess bless you and everyone who listens to you.
Thank you.
Namaste.
Namaste. Well, that was a wonderful, wonderful time with Mafu's channel, Amaji, whose name is actually Swami Paramananda Saraswati. Wonderful, wonderful woman. And I'm looking up more information on the Foundation for Meditative Studies.org. This is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you so much for tuning in. You know what? If you're not on my email list, email me, Veronica at Veronica Entwistle, no H in Entwistle.com, and I'll let you know because I send out a little flyer saying who's coming up. I love this. I love you all, and I approve of myself and you, and that's what we're all learning at this time. So many, many blessings and much love to you all. Good night.